make.
Late Night Gamers Podcast, where we make all of your gaming habits seem acceptable.
Late Night Gamers.
Sitcom on
Pogo. Steve.
Sitcom sucks so bad, guys. So unbalanced.
Everybody quit, never play it, Carl.
What do you do in your free time? Sit around knitting? Screw that shit, I'm gonna cut up a dragon's head.
Who's that?
It's okay if your guts explode. It's a bloody mess. As long as you don't take your clothes off.
I see you, Jack.
Gamers.
Trying to play like you know me.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Late Night Gamers Podcast, episode 29. I'm Nick Perzanowski, and with me this week and every week is Tim Madden.
I ran out of things to say. I just said, I'm going to put that in my mouth.
That was horrifying.
Jeez.
Steve Morgan.
It's too damn hot for a penguin to be just walking around.
Charles Colbo.
Charles. I wish everyone could just see Charles's face. After I say something, he just shakes his head. Just no.
I was just thinking about the comment. It's like, what the hell's the penguin doing walking around?
Charles just sounded like one of those ships that's they do their thing. Wah, wah.
Foghorn.
It's like when they play those foghorns when someone scores at a sporting event. Who's Nietzsche? Wah, wah. Or when you get those prank phone calls from the cruise lines when they call you up and they tell you you want free tickets for a cruise. It always starts off, bump. You're like, oh, yeah. Oh, it's in your ear. You're like, oh, why? It's so loud. Oh, great, thanks. Yeah, no, scam call.
I'm a winner.
I like the calls when they call and say, the FBI says that there's a home break-in every 5 minutes. Like,
yeah, I get that like probably like every once every month. Funny story related to that. One time my mom got one of those calls, and she was like, oh my god, I think the FBI, like, I don't know if it was the breaking one, but it was one related to FBI, and that was when we had the government shutdown. I was like, Mom, there's no FBI, so you have nothing to worry about. So good.
Like, yeah, that's a good point.
That's excellent.
That's fair, too.
All right. Let's do some gaming.
So, in gaming news this past week, someone played the largest game of Tetris ever. Hold on, let me get the numbers. I want to say it took up a total of like 59,800 square feet.
It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. And
yeah. Oh, it hasn't happened yet, has it? I thought it was happening on April 4th.
Yeah, no, it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
They're gonna break the record this year is what happened. It's Drexel University, and they paired up with this Brandywine Realty Trust skyscraper building, and last year they did. It's at apparently the kickoff to the Philly Tech Week or something, and they played Pong last year, and people sat on.
But it wasn't big enough for them. They wanted the whole city to enjoy it. And they wanted it to be on all sides of the building. And they wanted to get a giant subwoofer to just blast the music across the city.
And apparently people sat on the steps of the Philadelphia Museum of Art and played like these giant, or played Pong last year. And this year it's going to be Tetris. So that's nuts.
That's crazy. I'm actually surprised because MIT did this on like our huge building. We have like, it's not a skyscraper, but it's like, you know, a 15 story building, and they like played Tetris on it recently.
That's sweet.
And they use it to light up. They light up and do different things, like they make the American flag on and stuff.
Oh yeah,
they have the same thing where they have like lights and all the different windows that they can control. It's pretty awesome. Pretty cool.
It is awesome. Now they just need to make it not even a building, just a giant screen.
They just need, like, pixelate it more. so that they can use skyscrapers to play, like...
Call of Duty. Oh my god, people would be frightened to death. No, you need to play...
Does it use the lights in the room? Is it, like, the room in the building?
Yeah, I think it's, like, in every window they have a light, which essentially, like, they use as... They essentially pixelate whatever...
Because I was going to say that would suck if you were, like, working in there.
Yeah, I know.
Like... God damn it.
Yeah, I was trying to figure that out, like, how they do that here. Like, they must have just, like, a, like, it's at night. They must just have, like, lights on in the windows that they have set up, because I don't know how that would work. Like, yeah. Like, you're, yeah, you're only allowed to have, like, a blue light in your room now for, like, just, like...
That'd be awesome to, like, hack it and then just, like, turn everyone's lights on and off all day long in their offices. Like,
you can't go to bed now. Click...
Damn it.
Wake up.
Damn it, Drexel University.
Or the entire building's lights just flick on and off really quickly. It's just like strobe light. That'd be awful. Seizures for the whole city.
Awful.
It'd be awesome to hack it and like draw some ridiculous thing like a giant penis on the side of a skyscraper.
You don't really need to, though. You just need to do balls at the bottom.
Sure.
It'd be like, no, it'd be like Custer's Revenge. You know, Revenge.
You're like, oh gosh. Like, not that game again.
That would be awful. In other news this past week, we got some numbers back from February for sales numbers for the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, and it looks like the Xbox One is. Or, you know, had caught up a little bit with the PlayStation 4 and actually reached, I think, 90% of the PlayStation 4 sales in February. I think that's what it said. So, yeah. So, that's really surprising since PlayStation 4...
I thought it said, oh yeah, over 90% of what the PS4 had sold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
PlayStation 4 had launched in Japan, I think... middle to end of last month, so I'm kind of surprised since, you know, that brought in a lot of consoles in a short amount of time, but there's also Titanfall, which I'm sure is selling some consoles.
Yeah, and they bundled it with the system, so right.
Yeah, that's a really good bundle too, because you pay the same price and get the game,
a brand new game that's like one of the most anticipated. That's huge.
Yeah, and although in the article it says that a lot of those sales kind of came in March, so they'll see, they're kind of like waiting to see if Titanfall is a significant effect. It'll probably show up a lot more in March than it did in February, but I mean, I'm sure it had something to do with it. So
yeah. Is Titanfall in the PlayStation at all, or is it totally exclusive to Xbox?
At this point in time, it's just Xbox and PC.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I think March will give us a better idea of where things are going, but I think at the very least this shows us that Xbox is starting to catch up.
Yeah, definitely.
Which, I mean, a lot of people didn't think it would, but I guess it's a good sign for the gaming ecosystem.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, I know the PlayStation 4 is still ahead in terms of, like, overall numbers, but the fact that, you know, there's no clear winner at this point yet, you know, it's just like, I don't know. There are some clear losers, but...
Dude, can I just say, I was actually surprised in this article they gave the numbers for Wii U. I was actually pretty surprised.
They sold like 80,000 units or something?
Yeah. It, like, what was Xbox and PlayStation were like in the, what, 290,000, 300,000 range?
Yeah.
And Wii was like 30% of that. I'm actually surprised. I don't know.
The thing that surprised me was that they sold better. They sold the Wii U better this February than they did last February, which it had just launched like recently. So that's.
Yeah, I think they did a really bad job of advertising the launch, though. Like, I feel like they've actually advertised it more now than they have before.
I think there's a lot of confusion.
It's because they probably were like, you've already seen the Wii. You know what to expect. The Wii U!
I'd be interested to see, like, the regional sales breakdown for the Wii. Like, I wonder if it's just in, like, Japan or just in America or, like, where it's most predominant. Because it seems like, I mean, as far as I know in America... I don't know that many people who have a Wii U, or that many people who even would want a Wii U, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's probably more predominant in Japan or overseas.
Yeah.
Where overseas?
Somewhere weird.
Yeah. In the article, I actually mentioned that Xbox may not have it as necessarily a large global market share as PlayStation 4, and I thought that was interesting. I guess it makes sense considering Xbox is kind of, I mean, that's an American company, whereas PlayStation is Sony.
Right.
Even when Xbox first came out, it was like the fat American system, because it was like monstrous to begin with, and the controllers were like made for fat American hands, you know, so... I don't think anyone else really wanted to play with them.
Well, I think the Xbox One is... I read somewhere that it's launching in, like, 26 new countries in September or something. I don't know.
That's crazy.
I don't know which ones, but I have a feeling they're probably not huge, because it's already come out in, you know, Europe, North America, Australia, and...
It's like 26 islands, like, somewhere in like Southeast Asia.
It's like...
They're all separate countries.
It's like Crimea, Uganda.
26 different glaciers or icebergs.
It's just so that when they turn on the Xbox map and you see all the lights of people playing the games, they can say that they have gamers in those areas.
Yeah.
Just so that it's not like a dark continent.
Speaking of Crimea, does that count as two countries? Oh, too soon. Too soon.
Oh.
Too soon.
We just alienated all of our Ukrainian listeners.
All none of them.
Well, they don't got any nuclear weapons, so we don't need to care.
Yeah.
That's fine.
So.
Yes.
What were you going to say, Nick? I feel like you were going to say something until I made some horrible political joke.
I have no idea. I don't know. I don't know where I'm going half the time, so. This next thing is actually pretty big news. It's some former AAA, people that used to work for AAA, developers and publishers, went and started their own indie game studio. And There's someone from Call of Duty, Titanfall, the original Tomb Raider, Spec Ops: The Line, and there's also a bunch of other people from something recent too, which I don't remember now. But
before, we now refer to it as the Ken Levine effect, where developers leave in a small group.
It was Yaiba Ninja Gaiden. I think.
That's right.
That's the one.
I saw that and was like, oh, interesting.
Uh-huh. Charles didn't speak in the podcast for like 5 minutes because he was so enamored by the pictures and videos.
I know. I saw a review for that and it didn't review very well, but it doesn't matter.
It's probably just 20 hours of you hacking the same zombie pieces.
You're the only one that... Charles, you're the only one that grinds Ninja Gaiden.
Maybe it's just 20 hours of you, like, delicately, thinly slicing one single zombie.
Yes.
Yeah. So anyways, people all got together and they're making a next gen title called Daedalus, and it's going to be an existential horror, trip into a surreal half forgotten dream. End quote. I don't know what that means, but it doesn't sound like it's going to be like photorealistic. It sounds like they're going in a different direction with it, so.
Yeah, it was really interesting, the article. I think it, they kind of talked about how, at this point, it's like, I think it was like 8 people or something. It's a pretty small group, but they're based out of one of the guys' garage.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's really a low scale thing. But they had a lot of praise for kind of like the new distribution models or new like tools for indie developers, and how it's really easy to like, especially for them, for people who have like lots of skill in the industry, they can go to like Steam Greenlight or Kickstarter or somewhere and take the ideas they've had for years and you know, find funding without having to go to one of the major developers.
Right.
And they had a lot of praise for it. And they, you know, it's opened a lot of doors for them, and you know, I think it's a good, you know, good thing for the industry, and also it's good to hear someone who was from the AAA side finally, you know, have praise for kind of the little guys, you know, the tools that allow the little guys to really get ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we saw, like, we've seen the same thing with Red Barrels. Like, you know, they started with a couple AAA guys and came out with Outlast, and I think these bigger people are just, they're feeling really confined at AAA studios, and
yeah, it's one of the things they mentioned in that article is how constricting working on a large scale title can be, because you're pushed to get it out the door. You don't necessarily have the creative freedom,
right? And you're forced to be within that, because normally, you know, each studio is given their own, like, this is the game you're working on, and this is all you can work on. and this is the direction that the game goes, because this is exactly the way it's been for the past 4 sequels that we've done, so.
Alright. Yeah, I think it kind of signifies a shift or a trend in kind of the game development community, where, you know, previously you needed a publisher, you needed a big company to kind of bridge the gap between development to, like, being on a console, stuff like that. But now we have platforms like Steam Greenlight, where you literally just, you know, they take care of all that for you. It makes it a lot easier to be a small developer and not have to, you know, sell out to the big companies like EA or Activision. And I think that's
that was
a good thing.
That was another thing they mentioned in the article that I thought was interesting, is how that's kind of what we're touching on, is that the trend towards smaller... There seems to be a trend towards smaller games, and they wanted to get in on the trend before it started being, like, the norm. They wanted to get ahead of it. And I thought that was very kind of, not odd, but just kind of different than what I was expecting, because you expect that the AAAs are going to continue, and it's nice to see that it's not necessarily the case. It's kind of a pushback from the core gaming community on what their expectations are.
Yeah, they all sound kind of jaded with the whole AAA culture.
Yep. Mm-hmm. It sounds like they also want to... I thought it was interesting that they want to kickstart this first game that they're working on. And, I mean, if they're getting an article... This article came from GameSpot. And if they're getting that kind of press from such a large internet site, then that they would easily meet their kickstarting goal.
Yeah. I mean, the game itself sounds really cool. Mm. I don't think there's anyone who hears about the game and says, "Ah, oh, that sounds like horse shit."
Right.
Anyone who's played like any sort of survival horror is gonna be on
the. It sounds a little like they're doing a little concept theft from some of what's it called? The ones that recently came out. I forget the name of it. It was like the pig or...
Is a pig?
The machine for pigs, Amnesia.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Sounded a little bit like they were tapping into like some of that existential horror trip into a surreal half-forgotten dream. I mean, that's what I expect to be the description of those games too, so...
I think it, you know, by going that route, it means that you don't know what you're going to encounter. I think it leaves it so open, so like broad, that they can pretty much do anything in the game, which is scary. You know, the thought of never knowing what's going to happen.
It also tells us that they obviously play Dota 2, because Daedalus isn't that a weapon in Dota 2.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I would not know. I know nothing about Dota.
Steve, can you confirm or deny that? I feel like it is, but I could be totally off base. I could just be making stuff up. Not uncommon.
Nope. That's what you do.
Mobile.
So, I think our last kind of big news for this week is that there's some cross-platform support going on for Android and iOS, which is pretty crazy. But it's only is it only on the Google side, though?
Yeah, I was wondering this. I don't know.
This is what I've heard. That it was only Google's sort of side that was doing it, sort of waiting for
Apple to
iOS to make a move. Yeah.
I can't imagine Apple would ever do this if they had their way. You know,
no.
they're like xenophobic when it comes to any sort of interactivity.
They're probably gonna sue Google for some reason.
Probably. I don't really understand how this is gonna work though.
Mm-mm.
Which I mean, I guess it all comes down to technology, like. I know for like Xbox and like PlayStation, those are generally hosted by the companies, I believe, by like Microsoft handles most of the hosting. Whereas with games on iOS and Android, I'm pretty sure they handle the hosting themselves for multiplayer games, or it's hosted on a device. I'm just curious how they're facilitating this, or how it was restricted in the past, I guess. Technologically speaking, it seems like they could have been doing this for a long time.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. It's the first cross platform of any sort that we've seen. So
I think it's good. Let's hope
the games are on there that they would cross platform with.
Cave Runner.
I mean, there's some good ones. There's. It's like Gun Bros. That was fun. It's kind of like Geometry Wars a little bit.
Oh yeah,
it's a lot of. I mean, there's a lot of decent iOS games. What's the one? You're like the dude, and you have to like swing the sword. I forget what it's called. You battle bosses, or not bosses, but like dudes. You can fight through dudes.
Infinity Blade.
Infinity Blade. That one's pretty fun.
Yeah. It'll be interesting.
My phone's too shitty to have any games on at the moment.
Yeah.
Well, Hearthstone's coming to iOS, so that'll be something else.
The Game Ender.
Mm.
Yeah.
I need my...
Working at...
I need my games to have trophies.
Well, your cards are your trophies, Nick. Nope.
3 trophies for the chort. Little Homestar Runner right there.
I haven't gone. Is that site still around?
I don't even know.
Homestarrunner.com.
Drongar!
The emails.
Wasn't there? There was like Homestar Runner, who was like the freakish cousin or something. It was like all weird.
It's still here, by the way. It was last updated in 2010, almost 2011, 2000 and like. 2000 and the end of 2010, so it's been a while. That's a pretty long time though, considering I stopped going to it like in 2007, if that probably or like 2005.
The stuff was pretty funny. What was the one with all the girls?
Oh, the Strong Bad's little comics.
Yeah.
The ugly Arrowed.
The ugly one.
Yeah. I remember in high school, writes a paper and there's like a chart. It's like 1 battery, 5 batteries in the guy's mouth, and we print it out and he passed it in class. And to Miss Murphy, I don't know if she ever did anything with it. But...
Oh God, so good.
I can just picture her reading it like, what?
No, her response would have been like, what?
No, her response would have been, oh, this is so creative, and we should have thrown it out.
Ridiculous.
Alright.
She only said what when we were joking about the school not getting its accreditation again.
Yeah, that happened. That happened when our school like almost so lost its accreditation, upset. And we made hoodies that said "Last Accredited Class of Newfoundland High School."
That's awesome.
And then the principal came on the intercom and said, "There has been a rumor about such hoodies or T-shirts being formed, and this is not acceptable." And then she goes, "I know you guys wouldn't be involved in this, so I'm not even going to talk about it." And then like at the same time, Ryan's in the corner like handing out money to everyone in the class, like, "Yeah. The shirts are off. The shirts are off."
Yeah.
So good.
There was.
They had a design and everything.
There were so many like weird intercom things that happened at our school. Like the, I remember when the principal, Mr. O'Malley, got on and he was like, "Nobody's gonna pee in my school." This was after Dave Maloney peed in his pants.
Oh yeah.
For a band,
this is not interesting to anybody, but it's
no. Somebody peed their pants in class for a bet.
Yep.
That's all that you ever need to say. That was awesome.
It was hilarious. So, anyway, speaking of peeing your pants, our weekly segment this week is we wanted to talk about discuss how the degree of graphic detail and interactivity has affected how we game. And also how it's affected level design and kind of the evolution of it over the history of video games and stuff, and in a very broad sense. just to give you background, like when we're talking about graphic detail, we're just talking about like, you know, what items show up in an environment and what items you can interact with, and how that's changed. Because recently, I know this was something that came up to me because I was playing, as horrible as Thief was, it actually did have, you know, it was pretty interactive in the sense that you can, like, you know, you can open drawers, you can, you know, there's glass bottles that if you get too close to them, you knock them down, and then the NPCs will, they'll be alerted and stuff. And I was just like, man, this, like, I was just thinking to myself, wow, video games have come like so ridiculously far in terms of just making a world feel like it's, you know, it's real and that you're actually in it. 'Cause I don't know, it's a living and breathing environment, but.
Now, when you open up a menu in Thief, does it actually bring up like a screen where you'd have items, or does it just show you what's in that drawer?
No, it shows you what's in that drawer, and you like grab it and put it in your.
Yeah,
it's it.
Because I've always wondered about that. Is like, I'm kind of tired of just like a screen that shows me the items that are in some satchel or something.
Yeah,
I just want to see what it is, grab it, and be done with it. I don't have to open up a menu.
Right.
Yeah, or like when you open like a fist size bag, and there's like a broad axe in there.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I mean, like, I think we can start with kind of the evolution a little bit of graphic detail and interactivity with the like environmental level design. And I mean, we look back, and granted, as early as like even Super Mario 3, there were like certain, you know, you jump on top of stuff, but then if you held down long enough, you could go behind it and you could go behind the screen.
Yeah.
Like I think that's the first real like interaction with an environment that I can think of that was like beyond just like, I'm going to jump up and be on top of it, or I'm going to be in front of it. Like it wasn't static.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, like, looking back, I think there was probably a lot going on PC that I didn't really know much about, but at least for me, I think kind of like the renaissance in terms of interactivity was like Nintendo 64, because there was stuff like, I don't know, I mean, I guess for me, because that's just what I played so much of, but things like GoldenEye, being able to shoot. I mean, granted, everything exploded. You could shoot chairs.
Boom!
You could shoot. you can shoot random things, you know, just the idea that you could like destroy the environment a little bit. And you know, there were a lot of things like that that you that were like, whoa, oh my, that thing blows up if you shoot it, you know, just kind of added a whole different level to the, I mean, a whole different like aspect of the game that you weren't really used to.
Yeah,
I think a really important piece of kind of an infrastructure in games where there's been some movement in the direction is just like the extent to which you can move around in the environment. You can see, if you can see something in the game, you can probably move to where it is, unless it's like a mountain. But like being able to GoldenEye is a good example. I mean, there was some interactivity. You could destroy stuff, but if you, there was like a crate and the crate was blocking your path and the crate's only like a foot high, you couldn't jump on that crate to go over. You'd have to find a way around, despite the fact that it's, I mean, you could, if you were there, right, you could move over that crate.
Yeah.
And that's just the same extent, like, a lot of games. I think Mario 64 is different just because a whole portion of what Mario does is jump. It's all, kind of the framework of that game. But even in that game, there was limits to where you could go. I mean, you can't, you could see something, but if you go beyond the border, you get that, like, that death screen, and then you're moved back. So,
yeah. I think the first like real game that had a lot of interactivity that I remember was like Duke Nukem on the PC, and you could like interact with like toilets and like, you could like flush them, you know, even though they were like kind of they're two dimensionally on the wall and stuff. And I just remember like thinking like, I think it adds adds so much more dimension. I mean, it's stupid, right? It doesn't do anything for the game at all. It means nothing, but like, you know, when you grew up playing 2D games or games where you couldn't do anything other than like objective and not die, and you know, it was a very like interesting concept. Like you were just like, oh, this is like real. Like I just remember like and this is like way before Minecraft. Obviously, we're talking like 10 to 15 years before Minecraft, and I remember I spent so much time in Duke Nukem level editor trying to make like the building where I lived or like the street I was on, and you could like do it. It wasn't so hard, but like, you know, that like feeling of like having an environment in the game and having it be something besides just like, you know, blocks that you jump on a turtle or, you know, whatever the hell else like every other game was. It was very like, it changed, I think, and I think that changed with three-dimensional games, because you really need to have an environment once you go to 3D. It's almost impossible.
Right.
Like, you can't get around, like, you know, for the most part, you can't get around it. You really, now it's too realistic to like, cut corners on, like, how things look and how you interact with things, because you can walk around a chair, and you don't just, like, you don't have to just go over a chair, you have to actually, you know, go around it, so that now it's just uncomfortably or awkward for your person to not be able to like shoot it or push it or like whatever, you know, because that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of like movement in a level, we see like if there's something blocking your path, now it's like it's almost second nature that it's like, oh, I should be able to go up to it and just like kind of vault myself over it, or you know, I don't know, you can climb on top or you can push it. Like there's a million different ways that it can be interacted with now, and a lot. Even I think the biggest thing in terms of movement most recently is like parkour in games, and seeing that like it's not just like you go up to it and now you have to climb over it. It's actually like a fluid motion that you see that you can do while you're like running.
Yeah, funnily enough, you mentioned a good point. It's like game mechanics, like being able to push a crate and stuff like that, is like when you run up to something that you haven't experienced before, that's the only time when I really feel challenged as the gamer before, and I really enjoy it. It's just I don't really see that as much anymore, because if you play one game, you pretty much know the mechanics of another game, whether it be interaction with the environment, so, or just kind of like how to solve puzzles in that game, because you'll know how to move crates, you'll know how to use like an item that you get where it's like that's similar to the hook shot. I mean, I think there's a hook shot in every game now, where you can somehow like grapple onto something and then pull yourself up,
just cause
or
to.
Like how to navigate ledges in a game. And I mean, that stuff's all kind of set. And if there's any new mechanic to it, or there's a new item, it really it really takes you some time to learn that.
Yeah, I think if you kind of go back, there was a point where developers really, they basically had to offer some sort of visual cue to kind of give you an idea of what you had to do, tell you what on the screen was interactive and what wasn't. You know, there might be like a box or a wall that you have to shoot through to get to the next level, but we were at a point where it was hard to distinguish between things on the screen that were interactive and things that weren't. So they would be like, it would glow, or there'd be an arrow to point you where to go or something like that, or you'd have an objective to blow something up. Whereas now there's a lot of games that are just so open, the total environment destruction and stuff like that, where there isn't an objective, you just kind of do whatever you want.
Yeah, and I think this gets back to what Tim said, I think like the last week or the week before, about the realisticness of games, and you can just see it in that, like, we've become so accustomed to the game has to be realistic, right? Like, that box, if there's a game and you can't move a box or do something with a box, like, you're just like, what the F? It's a box. Like, you know, you're that's just the way we are now. Like, whereas, like, 5-10 years ago, you might be like, oh, you can't move that box. You just can't. It's part of the, you know, it's just like part of the game. Like, that's.
Or that's one of the type of boxes you can't move.
Yeah, exactly.
Even for, like, Jet Force Gemini, there were the giant metal boxes and there were the, like, little smaller boxes. And you're like, blow up the little small ones, but you can't even do anything.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, it's our expectations of games now are so high, and that, like, and in a way, it also standardizes them, like Charles said. It makes the games have to follow this sort of, like, set of, like, rules, where if they deviate from that rule, unless you have some clever way of, like, convincing me, I'm gonna be like, this is stupid, like, I want to be able to move this, or go over this, or do this, because this isn't realistic, I would just jump over this, like, in real life. So, I think that, like, really dictates, like, how creative they can get without having some kind of secondary, explanation, like, it's a change of dimension, or, you know, this is how I think a lot of puzzler games now have to do these things where, like, you stop time or something, because you can't really, like, justify, like, making something complicated anymore with, like, moving a box and jumping up a ledge, because that's so simple. I mean, everyone knows it now, it's just the way it is, it has to be that way, because there's no other way that makes any sense, so... And so I think those tie everything together, really, what you said.
Yeah, and I think it'll be interesting. You know, I think our generation, we grew up with the, 2D platformers and then some of the, like, early 3D games. So we kind of, we went into it knowing they kind of fed off of the past, whereas games now are so open, so broad, it allows people, like, younger gamers, people who may not have even been born yet, when they start to play games and they have, they're not, they haven't been trained by games in the past like we have, they're going to have so many, they're going to approach problems with they're going to have different approaches to problems, which will be really interesting to see how they solve them.
Yeah.
One of the other questions that we've got on our board is static environments, do they still exist? And, they definitely do.
Yeah.
There's no question. I mean, there's a lot of flexibility within games about, like, what you can do with the environment. But I think especially with the focus on, like, storytelling as opposed to, like, an open world concept, there's a lot of interactivity within that game. But if it's a story, then it's a static environment. There's a kind of a set path that you're going to be taking. It's not a sandbox anymore. It's not even sandbox games to some extent are, when you get down to it, they're still static because just kind of the way they are. I mean, there's a limit to the amount of coding that anyone can do. So
yeah.
I think when we're the only example of a non-static game will be like the new EverQuest when it comes out, is kind of if it feeds off of other events in the world or some other game, like other pieces. But I mean, pretty much every game is, I think, most game environments are static, totally static.
Yeah, I think EverQuest Next is basically the pinnacle of dynamic worlds. But related to that, the first MMO I ever played, one of the first PC games I ever played was Astron's Call, and it was one of the first, one of the only games that had like an open world design. So it was a huge world. I forget how big, you know, hundreds of square miles, but there were no loading screens in it. And I had played EverQuest, and to go to a game, to go from a game where you literally loaded like between every single zone to a game where you, where it was this open world where you, I mean, the only times you loaded were if you logged in and logged out, or you went through like a portal or something weird. So it was such a, it really immersed you in the world to be in like a real world where you didn't load. And I think that's, it kind of, not every game does that nowadays, but I feel like that is a huge factor as well. And I think it kind of goes along with that interactive world idea, this idea where the world kind of is persistent that you don't always get in games.
Yeah. I think that's really important for any sort of immersion in an environment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that was something that really bothered me actually in Thief, was that the world wasn't like, it wasn't all one place. And sure, like when you'd go off and there'd be certain levels that you would go off to other sections, and there's just a lot of load screens, and like you'd be traversing a city and you'd open up a window and then it would then do a load screen, and you'd then be on the other side of that window in a like slightly different part of the city. It was still all connected in that one like neighborhood or whatever, but
so it wouldn't just be just like an Assassin's Creed model where you would just go into a section of the city, open up the window, and then go out. It would do a fully new load screen. That's
very yeah. Odd. It just wasn't fluid. And, I don't know, that kind of thing, and especially since, the game is so realistic in terms of everything else, like, to be, have to go into a load screen with, like, a progress bar at the bottom, like...
I mean, from a developer's perspective, it's hard to code, like, a smooth transition like that, but, yeah, so it totally brings you out of the immersion when you get to sit on a load screen.
One thing I was...
Well, at least to the extent they can have it so that the load screen is, like, instantaneous. Like, it kind of was in Fallout 3, and, I mean, you could go through a window, but... Or even in Skyrim, you go through the upstairs door, and it's not just kind of a seamless transition, but at least it's pretty instantaneous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One other thing I was going to bring up before we get to some listener questions was how, like, as things got more, like, realistic in games and, like, your interactivity got, like, a lot higher, and this was I'm thinking of probably toward the end of last gen, but Steve, you brought up, like, how in Duke Nukem you could flush toilets and stuff, and it was, you know, the most mundane things ever, but, like, I'm seeing more and more like mundane things included in games. Just like, you look at Heavy Rain or Beyond Two Souls, and I mean, you're playing a character in a living world or whatever, and everything's normal, supposed to be normal in the game. But so you can go around and like in Heavy Rain, you could go to you could sit down at your desk and draw something on a piece of paper, or you could turn on water, or there's just like all kinds of stuff that you could do, and open a door, and
I think there's the door would for,
open a door and it would stay open not yeah, close yeah. on its own.
I think there's a lot of improvement for this kind of stuff, and even for games that ostensibly kind of have reached their peak, like first-person shooters. I mean, how many times do you actually need to shoot the lights? Why can't you just turn them off? Like, is it really necessary for you to blow a hole in the light bulb when there's a switch on the wall you just can't do anything with it? Or there's just a lot of stuff like that. I mean, you get to certain points where you can control, like, this. You call the subway or you call the elevator, but... That's just, I mean, that's stuff that has always kind of been in games like that. But a lot of, like you say, mundane, interactive stuff. Like, you go into an office and there's computers all over. Well, can you turn any of them on? Or is it just the one that you could turn on that's like the objective that's already on? You can just go to that computer because it's glowing. What about all the other computers in the room? Is there anything you can do with those? Probably not.
Yeah, I think we'll reach that point sometime in the future where the game is literally like real life. You know, it'll be interesting to see what happens at that point.
Yeah, I want it to be like a fully scaled, detailed version of Second Life. Like, I just want to sit down and like drink a cup of interactive fake coffee and.
Well, it will basically be like the Matrix.
Yeah. When the games get to the point where it takes longer to actually, like, go out the door than it takes me in the morning, then I'm going to have to say, oh, goodbye. It's like, oh, you want to go out and you actually want to, like, hunt something if that's the point of the game? Oh, well then, okay, you need to make sure you're dressed. You need to make sure you've got you need to catalog the proper equipment. You can't just look in your bag. You need to, like, go to the bathroom before you go out the door. You need to put on the thing to make sure that they can't smell you. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's like, no thanks.
No. So, anyway, I posed a question on Twitter, and basically I said, how do you think level design and, how do you think detail and interactivity and level design will continue to evolve? And we got a couple responses, and... Mike Bean writes in and says, "Holodecks,
best one." Yeah, I mean that's like that's the pinnacle. That's the ultimate video game right there. You know, to be able to just walk into a room and then you are like in the game. Mm.
What was that? What was that? That was in something. It was in a movie.
Holodecks? That's Star Trek.
Well, yeah, but not like. Not holodeck specifically, but
there was a holodeck in Jason X.
Oh, that's right.
And he like attacks them, and they're like, "This isn't fake." And then he like, like cuts all their heads off.
Pipe through their chest. They're like, "This isn't fake."
Yeah, I think that's the one where he's like, Jason's in the thing, and he wraps that girl in a sleeping bag and like beats her to death against a tree.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't remember. It's been so long since I saw it. All I remember is that he takes someone's face and dips it in liquid nitrogen and, like, smashes it.
It's a classic.
It really is. Everyone should go see it if you haven't.
Jason in Space.
If you ever had a question about Jason Voorhees being in space, this is what happens.
Do a Q&A with Jason Voorhees.
At that, Chaffee wrote in and said, I feel like environments will become more of a silent character than a backdrop. Like, in real life, everything is alive around us. I feel like environments will become more of a... Oh, wait, that's twice.
Duplicate.
How did that happen? I started reading the same thing twice.
He's a broken record.
I feel like environments will become more of a silent character. I feel like environments will become more of a silent character.
Environments will become more of a silent backdrop.
Yeah.
Backdrop.
Tony,
backdrop.
Two times over here. two times.
But yeah, I totally agree. Like, you know, an environment is really like, it is a character in a lot of games. And you don't really see it that way because you're not paying... You're not, like, thinking of it in that sense, but it's, you know, it tells you about where you are, it tells you about, you know, what might be coming, it tells you a lot of stuff.
That's what the music is for.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even say silent character, either. I would say it's, you know, it's going to become a major character. And there's a lot of games where it already is, where, you know, manipulating, I mean... You know, the more realistic games where manipulating the environment can have a major impact on the game.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like Terraria.
Yeah. I can remember playing
games where you can terraform, and then all of a sudden the environment is huge.
Yeah, that would be really cool. I can remember playing, I think it was the original, what the hell is it called? It took place on Mars, and you're like Resistance Fighters, Red Faction, that's what it was. And it was like one of the first, I don't know if it was the first one or second one, but it was like one of the first games where you could like blow up the environment, and you could, I remember if you had like the rocket launcher, you could shoot a giant hole in the wall or in the ground, you know, you could blow things up and you could create like tunnels. So you would shoot a rocket in the ground and then just keep shooting it down and like drill a giant hole in the ground. But it was like one of the first games where you could really interact with the environment and like shoot through walls.
This was Red Faction.
Make new paths. Yeah. You know, so I think that's like a good example of where you could change the objective, or you could like bypass things by shooting through walls, or like, or you know, creating a hole that something would fall into, or stuff like that. And I think that, you know, going forward, that's only going to be more. It's only going to happen more, especially with games like Battlefield 4, where you can destroy entire buildings. You know, it's only going to get more intense.
Paulo VGHA wrote in and said, in this new gen, I'd like everything on the environment to have proper sound, and that destructibility really becomes a thing. Because destructibility is huge.
I think everyone wants that.
Also with like Minecraft and games like that, people are...
Right.
That's what they expect, kind of.
Has anyone played... I forget what it's called. I think it's called Rust or something. It's like Minecraft, but kind of like more realistic.
I see my brother play it a little bit, but I haven't played it.
Yeah, I'm just curious because it's got some decent reviews, but it would just be interesting to see what sort of interactivity it has.
You start with like nothing in this game. You start with like a rock in your hand, and you have to like smack things with it. It's very intense.
I just remember reading the review for it, and the guy was like, I have a man trapped in my house, and I feed him fish or something. It just like, sounds ridiculous.
What a highly interactive game. Wonderful.
We have another one here. I don't know a ton about Evolve, the new game coming out, but ShowEnough71 said, I'm kind of thinking that Evolve might be the evolution of gameplay, environment, interactivity. Oh, yeah. The way the monster and the hunters interact with the environment and each other to meet objectives could be groundbreaking.
This game looks amazing.
It really does. The fact that there's lots of like really small nuances or small interactivity that you would never like really think about in other games. Like, you can, if you're one of the hunters, you can watch the tree line. If the monster moves too much, it'll cause the birds to fly out of the trees. So like, there's very, very like minor visual cues to tell you where the monster is. So as the hunters, you're trying to track this monster down, and as the monster, you need to like grow and build up your strength before you attack the people, the hunters. So you know, you're trying to hide initially, but if you like make too much noise or do anything that will set. You know, cause the environment to react, it can give them a clue as to where you are. So there's a lot of, you know, I think he has an absolute point where it's probably one of the first games where minor things like that will have a major effect on it.
It looks really good. I'm watching some gameplay trailer right now, and I'm like, woo, it looks awesome.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. I think the 4v1 idea is really cool.
And the only monster that they've shown, that's not going to be the only monster. So there's going to be some variability between like what the monsters actually do. And I hope that they really get creative with it. And there's different ways for like the monster to grow, as opposed to just like the standard eating like creatures in the environment. Maybe it'll like whether it be like they metabolize some other way. But I think that'd be really cool.
It looks really, really like interactive environment too. Like, the monsters like smashing through doors that are like destructible and like burning like bushes with like flame breath and like picking up rocks and throwing them at people. It's pretty intense.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Looks really good. It's like player versus player boss battle, basically.
Yeah.
Such a great
four
concept.
Players versus the player monster. It's like Juggernaut, really.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Jugs gotcha.
Get out of my head.
So, I think that brings us to our top five this week, which is the top five environment bugs that ruin a game, or can ruin a game. Sometimes they're hilarious. But number one, falling through the earth.
Every MMO, like, in beta ever. Like, and now MMOs in beta, they don't even bother. They just, like, have a button that you have. It's like, yeah, I'm falling through the earth. Like, push this thing and it'll send you back where you came from.
I can remember.
This happened to me in Skyrim.
Yeah. I remember playing, like, the WoW beta, and they literally, like, made a macro that was just slash stuck.
Yeah.
It was like, all right, I'm not going to deal with this.
I think I was, I had played, one of the really early Call of Duty games. I don't remember which one it was. One of the ones that took place in World War II.
A Medal of Honor? Oh, no, yeah.
Medal of Honor, that's, sorry. Yeah, Medal of Honor,
some,
that's what I'm
some
thinking
of the Call of Duty original ones, I think, were. Like, Call of Duty 2 and 3 were...
It was Medal of Honor, though. It was, like, it was one of the... It was, like, I don't remember which one it was, but I was going through a street, and I went down, like, into this, like, I was trying to go down these stairs, and I had just fallen through the stairs, and I remember being upside down, and everywhere around me, it just looked like sky, and above me what was the actual level, and I was just getting farther and farther away from the level. I was like, no!
That's awful.
That's the worst, especially, like, when you haven't saved, and then you're just like, oh, I'm never gonna get out of this.
There was a game recently I was playing, maybe it was Skyrim, I can't remember, but there was a certain bug where you fell through the ground, and then there was, like, nothing you could do, and you would inevitably just, like, reappear, but you would slam, like, take a bajillion fall damage and just die. So you'd be like, you'd just be, like, with somebody, you'd be like, yeah, I'm falling through the earth, yeah, I'm gonna die in, like, 20 seconds, so then, but, and then you just splat, like, somewhere, like, just appear on the ground. So bad. Still happens, man.
It does. Number two.
Invisible horizon. When the horizon does not show up, making it look like a window. This happens to me a lot of the time, and pretty much every new game that I get, then you gotta figure out the way to fix it, but it's just like a setting that makes it so, or like some odd combination of settings and that kind of how the map is made that makes it so, like, you're looking at the side of a mountain, and instead of the side of the mountain, you're seeing just like a window in that mountain.
Yeah, essentially, really you're a clip. Anytime, like, the game clips and you can see through things and see.
Yeah.
Like, through, like, you can see through, like, a door or something, and you can see through, like, a mountain and see the background. It's the worst. Although, I'm trying to think, there's been some games, I can't remember, I think most of them single player, where, like you can see through things, and you can see, like, enemies coming around the corner, and you just shoot them, like, before they come.
Yeah. You definitely take full advantage of it, but it doesn't exactly do any favors to the game.
Yeah, it's really bad, and it takes you completely out of, like, the game, right? Because you're like, oh, now I know I'm definitely in a game. Like, you have no, like, you're not, like, in the zone, so to speak.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that the most new games I've had, though, have been pretty good about not having this issue. Like, this happened a lot when, I think, when games started pushing, especially on PC, obviously, because everyone's PC's different, everyone's graphics card different, and your drivers and all these things, so you always have issues with this, but I think they've done a little bit better job of this happening.
Yeah. I sometimes find it if you're, like, sometimes when I'm playing, first-person shooters, and you get, like, you're getting too close to a wall.
You can see through it, like,
in a corner. Yeah. It starts looking. You can start seeing, like, all the polygons. And makes it all wonky looking.
Yeah, I can't remember what this happened to me. This did happen to me in a game recently, where you could, if you got close to a corner, you could see into the wall. And so, like, I was abusing this. Like, if I just was coming, I would, like, stick as close to the wall as I could, and then I would see them, and then I'd shoot them. I feel like it might have even been in a multiplayer game, like a Call of Duty or something. Probably Ghost, now that I think about it.
Most likely.
Where you could, like, see a guy kind of, like, coming, and you just start blasting him through the wall.
Oh, although Battlefield 4 also had its fair share of problems.
Yeah, I don't think I need to be adding more problems to Ghost. They have enough of their own.
We go to number three.
Yeah, sure.
Number three.
I can say this one. Number three, this is invisible barriers. So, I mean, anytime where you have glitches or bugs where you can't get through something or get... And I guess you could probably even extend this to... like, yeah, I mean, Nick can talk about invisible barriers.
Yeah, I posted a video this week because Thief was consuming, unfortunately, a lot of my time. And I got to the last level of the game. It's like chapter 8 or whatever, and there's this pipe section that you're climbing. You're supposed to climb, and at first I couldn't climb it at all. It wouldn't let me up there. And then finally I get up it, and I'm like, oh! And then I'm like jumping back and forth, and then I turn on like my I don't know, the thing that kind of highlights, I don't remember what it's called in Thief, but it like highlights the world and it shows you what things you're supposed to do. So I'm like, am I like doing this wrong? And I turn on that highlighted thing and it shows the pipe, and I'm definitely supposed to climb along the pipe, but I'm just sitting there and like, it shows me just climbing into a corner and stopping and not being able to do anything. And literally like the next section was where like the end of the game was. Ugh, so frustrating.
It's shocking.
I think, you know, maybe not a bug, but I think there's a lot of games, too, that kind of have, like, a, you know, they'll have, like, invisible barriers for places they don't want you to go.
Yeah, that's the worst, yeah.
It, like, it totally takes you out of the immersion when it's like, I can walk that way, but you don't want me to. I mean, at least put, like, a fake wall there or something.
Yeah,
right.
Some of those older games that had that where, like, you know... You're just in this, like, totally, like, in the environment, and you're just, like, you want to go somewhere, and then you just get to a street, and you're just not allowed to walk down it.
Yeah.
You're like, what? Like, why? I want to go that way. I could just, then I wouldn't have to fight all these guys. Like,
yeah, I think a lot of new games now, or a lot of current games, make it in the level design so they, like, park cars or something.
Make it very obvious, yeah.
So it's like, you can't go this way. This is not supposed to be, yeah, you're not supposed to go that way, but...
That always drove me the most insane when there's, like, a lawn, and you can see off in the distance. I mean, especially when they put something like a chest or something that, if it was in the usable world, you could open it up. It's just, like, but the way that they put it in, it's just, you can't get to it. It's just a chest for display purposes. It's like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
That happens a lot in Final Fantasy games.
Number four.
Trapped NPCs. And I guess you could say, like bad, horrible pathing in general.
Every single escort quest in World of Warcraft.
Right.
Basically, every single escort quest in any game you play... The escort quest just shouldn't exist, period.
I remember playing, like, I think Elder Scrolls, and I'm like, wow, this guy actually runs as fast as I run when I move? Like, holy shit, like, everyone stop.
Yeah. Another Thief example. I had one NPC that, he was like a watchman, and he was... just kind of spinning uncontrollably in one section of a level, and wouldn't move from that space, which isn't helpful. But
the one that I was thinking of in like trapped NPCs is that when I was playing Grand Theft Auto, and one of the characters that I need to talk to was like stuck in a filing cabinet. You could see their head, but like, they couldn't come outside of it. And I was like, well, this is interesting, okay.
That's always the worst, too, when, like, you're trying to wait. It's like a spawn timer or something where an NPC has to be at a certain place at a certain time, and it's like they're stuck in a wall or something. It's like you can't kill them. You like, there's no way to fix it besides, like, reload your game or something.
Yeah.
You're just basically stuck.
Anger.
Yeah.
But you're definitely right. Escorts are the worst because if a NPC gets trapped in like at the bottom of stairs and they just can't seem to figure out how to go up them, there's nothing
It's so the worst is when you know they're supposed to follow you down the stairs and they're not even like making any move to walk or anything. They're just standing there and blankly staring at you. Like, God damn it.
The saving grace though is when they code in like the teleport. So like when someone's like a pain in the ass and you're just like at some point you're just like, fuck it, I don't care, this guy, I'm leaving this dude, I'm done with him. And then you just run and then all of a sudden he appears next to you, like, alright, okay.
Mm.
At least I don't have to deal with that long enough. Although that's kind of frustrating when you spend like an hour trying to like dodge left and right to guide the guy up the stairs, and then finally you're like, fuck it, you know, after hours later, and then he appears next to you like, why didn't I know that before?
This actually brings up a separate issue that I have had with some multiplayer first-person shooter games. If one player is like trying to do something and the other player just runs forward, and then you suddenly just teleport to the player that's like the more current version, like furthest in the game, that drives me nuts. But that's a separate issue. And then the final one, being attacked through walls. Whether it be...
This is like, I saw my brother playing, what's that new zombie game that, I can't remember the name of it. Yeah, DayZ, I think is what it was. And he was playing it, and there was like this issue where like zombies, like were running through walls. So I was watching my brother play, and he'd be like, oh, I think there's a zombie here, and be like, ah, he came through the door and started hitting him, and he's like, ah, screaming. I was like, oh, that sucks. I mean, it's not like anything you can do.
The worst is when there's some combination of like trapped NPCs and being attacked through walls, so you can't hit them at all, but they can hit you regardless. Like, you know that there's like a rat in this stone in front of you, so you walk past the rat and it's like biting you, but you can see its tail poking out, but you can't hit that. That's not something you can hit, so it's terrible.
Very true.
I guess this is a sort of separate issue, but it's kind of just like level design and AI and how it can really affect things. And like when you're playing a game and you're being chased by something and you go and you like, it, you know, if you run into a room and you close the door, sometimes like that'll stop them most of the time or whatever. But like sometimes you'll be running through like down a hallway and you'll just get to a certain point and they'll just stop. And be like, I guess I'm not going to get you then. And you can, like, stand, like, 2 feet away from them, and they're just not going to get you. That happened to me in, Thief, too.
yeah, that's bad.
Like, these guys were, this guy saw me, and he's like, you better come out of there! And I just, like, I jump over this box, and I'm on the other side of this box, and he goes, oh, I guess he's gone. I'm like, nope, I'm still right here. You're looking at me.
This is actually something that it's like the exact opposite of that for Grand Theft Auto. If you get spotted by the cops, they will hunt you down, and I found it so hard to lose them in that game. It's awful. It's like I just wanted to just shoot them to get them off my tail. All
right.
So that.
Well, that is our top five, and that brings us to the end of our podcast, where we talk a little bit about what we've been playing. So, Tim, what you've been playing?
Not much. I've been playing basically a lot of Diablo 3, getting ready for Reaper Souls. And they just closed the auction house, which is kind of weird. But, yeah, that's what I've been playing, some Hearthstone too, but not much.
Cool.
Steve.
I've been playing Titanfall mostly. It's still going good. I'm almost prestige, which is actually pretty far behind most people, because everyone's already like 2 usually by now. But it's good. I like it. I think it's. I have no qualms with it. I crush people, so that makes me feel good. And I think it's. I think it's probably one of the better first person shooters I played in a while. Probably since Black Ops 2.
Would you say better than Ghosts?
Yeah. It's much simpler. It's very, like, standard. It feels like you unlock everything very quickly, which in one way is kind of, like, disappointing, or it makes it kind of monotonous. But in another way, I think it makes everyone kind of more equal. There's not people that have like a lot of difference. So we'll see. I mean, the gameplay itself, I think, is lasting. So we'll see how it ends up.
Yep. Nice.
That's good.
It's good.
Charles.
I've still been playing Kingdoms of Amalur. I just want to finish it through, though. The game is tediously long. Similar to the things that I've talked about before, it's like it's not that enthralling, but it's enthralling enough that they make me want to like play it through to the end. I've also been playing Castlevania Lord of Shadows, and I've been enjoying that quite a bit. It's mostly just about the story. There's that, I mean, the level design is pretty standard. It reminds me a lot of Ninja Gaiden in that way, where it's kind of, you know where you're going to go, and it's very, very hard. So I must have spent 7 or 8 trials trying to beat this ice golem that I ran into. And no nosebleed, but it's probably going to happen by the time the game ends. So. And then I am actually thinking about starting up Diablo 3 again, just because what you've been talking about with expansion and some of the other restructured the leveling. So I may download that again soon.
Excellent. Well, I took out the trash. I mean, finished playing Thief, and thankfully, the game isn't terrible. It just seemed like a waste of my time. And
for a AAA game, it was a B.
Yeah, but like triple C, actually, but
not even triple C, just a C. Just one solitary C.
But I did start playing Tomb Raider Definitive Edition, and that game's awesome. I don't know how it compares to like the last gen versions in terms of graphics, but it looks great. The gameplay is really great. There's a good mix of like collecting stuff, finding secret tombs, solving puzzles, climbing walls, shooting people dead. Like,
how far into the game are you? Have you got to the part where that guy, you have to steal that gun from that guy, and otherwise he just snaps your neck? Because I must have got my neck snapped in that scenario like about 100 times.
I haven't gotten there yet.
Okay, well, there's a certain part where like if you don't do a right button combination, this guy just breaks your neck, and I was like. It started getting like kind of bothersome. Like I was like, I don't want to see my neck broken anymore. Like, I don't like it.
That is one thing that's like it's pretty intense. Like the death scenes in that game.
Yeah,
they're like super realistic.
You get like curb stomped and shit. Yeah, like.
I mean like, right at the beginning of the game, you're getting chased by these savages or whatever, and you're trying to squeeze under this rock, and as it's falling down, and the savage grabs your leg, and you're trying to get away. And if you don't press the button at the right time, the rock comes down, and you just watch your head get like smushed. Yeah, it's awful.
It's brutal.
Yeah, it's really brutal. It's like very, very like it's negative reinforcement. Like you don't want to die because you don't want to see this shit. You're like, dude, this is like,
no, Lara.
I wonder if that game in the Insane Asylum will be so graphic. I don't even think Dead Souls was that graphic about its death. So.
It's just like you don't want to see your main character get like its arm broken in half or like get shot in the dome like over and over again. Yeah. That's like what happens. They're always so gruesome. You're like, oh, no. Oh, God.
So it's not just the blood coming down the screen and going, the end.
Yeah.
It's like a slow motion. It's like Mortal Kombat. Fatality, like.
Yeah, it's like a very cinematic death, and so you have to like essentially watch this cinematic of failure over and over again. Like you're just like, oh okay, yeah, okay, I got it. I think I know I'm done.
I think we need this in like zombie games to watch people get ripped apart.
Oh yeah, totally. If you don't get away from a zombie, and the zombie should just like it should show you getting grabbed and like your throat.
It's
kind
of like this in it's like this in The Last of Us, right?
Yeah.
Like,
that's right.
Whenever you get kicked, like caught by a clicker, you just be like he would just like rip your throat out, and then the screen would just go black, and you'd be like motherfuck, like just be so angry because it was so intense.
Yeah, because they like, move really fast, and they're just like
just blood everywhere, and you're like, no.
Yeah, it's so intense. But intensity brings us to the end of our podcast.
Kamehame!
He's over 9,000!
So I want to thank the real Mike Bean, that Chaffee, Paolo VGHA, Shonuff 71, and all of our listeners for listening in this week. And I want to thank Tim, thank you Steve, thank you Charles. This has been Late Night Gamers Podcast, episode 29, and it is legitimately late, so we're all going to bed.
Maybe. Later.
Not at all.
I'm going to play Titanfall.
Titan.
Dude.
Nick.
Late Night Gamers Podcast, where we make all of your gaming habits seem acceptable.
Late Night Gamers.
Sitcom. On.
Steve.
Sitcom. Suck so bad, guys. So unbalanced. Everybody.
Quit. Never play it. Everybody.
Come on, Charles.
What do you do in your free time? Sit around knitting? Screw that shit. I'm gonna cut up a dragon's head.
Everybody. Do the limb. Who's that?
It's okay if you've got swollen. It's a bloody mess. Come on. As long as you don't take your clothes off.
I see you, jockey.
Gamers.
Trying to play like you know me. I'm like, come on.
Snuggles the bear loves crack.
What?
You heard me. Yeah.
Yes.
I was buying you as much time as I could.
Cool, buddy. You're real cool, buddy.